bringing you everything under the Disney umbrella. Network 1901.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Lipstick and Lightsabers. I am Shannon.
And I'm Alex.
And we want to start off the show by saying that this is the second time we are recording this episode. My computer just decided to peace out on me in the middle of a recording, and we lost everything.
Yeah, I want to say we were like 80% done.
We were literally almost done. Like, it was great. Technology is amazing. And I have no idea what happened, but
it was really strange. You just disappeared, and I was like, oh my god, where'd you go? Oh my god.
Well, I could still hear you. Like, all of a sudden, my screen turned off, and I could still hear you, and I'm like, I don't think she can hear me. And then, like, the whole computer shut off, and I'm like, well, that was great. But the second my computer came back on, like, everything was still running except for Audacity, and Audacity was just like, nah, I'm done. So... you know, it is what it is. That's okay, because we're still here. We're still going to talk about Crash of Fate, which we are very excited to talk about. But first up, we got some exciting news today about Disney Plus. So we can actually talk about that this time. And that means that Alex is actually going to get Disney Plus.
Yeah, so initially we had heard that Canada and the UK wouldn't be getting Disney Plus until like January or February. So I was really sad because I want to be watching The Mandalorian along with, like, all the Americans. So now I actually get to see it when it launches November 12th. It's so exciting. So they announced that Canada and the Netherlands are getting it the same day as the U.S. And then there were a couple other countries that were the week later.
Yeah, I know Australia was one of those countries, I think. I feel like the Netherlands is a random one to throw.
Yeah, well, I feel like I saw someone say that they're still kind of negotiating each country for a date, so it's likely there'll be others on the November 12th date.
Yeah.
Hoping for all our UK friends that they'll get it that day, too.
Yeah. I mean, it was going to be absolutely ridiculous if Canada didn't get it the same day, because I just feel like, you know, it's all North America, right? Mm-hmm.
Like, and I think they announced for Canada it would be $8.99 Canadian a month or $89.99 for a whole year. So I thought that that's a pretty good deal. It's cheaper than Netflix.
Yeah, for sure. And I know that they're not doing the Hulu bundle, right?
I don't think so. Unless they decide to introduce Hulu in Canada. We don't have it, so I don't think
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't think it made it quite that far yet. I don't have Hulu, so I don't know how worth it is to get the bundle. Mm-hmm. I know most people were a little worried, like, because you can get Hulu with or without ads, and the people who have it without ads were worried that it was going to, like, mess up their Hulu. So
yeah.
I don't know anything about that, but I guess that is something to maybe look for.
I know a lot of people have been asking if they'll be able to bundle it with cable and stuff, too, but... I wouldn't know. I don't have cable. I just have Netflix. So, and my life. And I go to the library to borrow movies.
Yeah. You've got some exciting movies headed your way. So.
I do. I'm excited.
Yeah. We were talking a lot about The Beguiled last night, the Sofia Coppola one.
Yeah. So I put a hold on it. I'm excited.
Yeah, I want to rewatch it now because we kept talking about it. And I'm like, I need to see this movie again because it's so good. Very femme gaze. Highly recommend. But another thing that was really exciting is that Lucasfilm is going to be developing The Children of Blood and Bone, a young adult novel by Tomi Adeyemi. This is really, really exciting. This book is so freaking good. Alex, just finish it.
Yeah.
And go ahead. Tell us your thoughts.
So... this book is insanely well just, like, built up. This world is so, like, broad, and the characters fit into this world so well. This author is able to build up, like, this world, but also the characters at the same time. And, like, it takes so much talent to be able to do that. And it was very... Avatar The Last Airbender, there was a lot of that dynamic of them going on a quest, but also there was this really nice sibling dynamic that was really similar to Avatar that I really, really liked.
Yeah, and her character work, like, her world building is great because this is all really rooted in African mythology, which is super refreshing. I feel like YA has finally started to kind of, like, break out into other cultures.
Because it's always been so European Western fantasy. European. Which, I mean, I like, but it's great to see it change and be other things.
Oh, 100%. And, like, she just weaves this, like, really interesting mythology. And, like, her character work is so well done. All four of our main characters feel, like, fleshed out three-dimensional main characters. That's going to translate so well to film.
And
it's going to be really great.
I love how she juggles between each of the characters in different chapters, so you get different POVs. It's really great.
Well, and she handles it well, because there are some books that you get multiple point of views, and, like, it's good, and, like, sometimes some are better than others, but I feel like with her, they all balance out really well, because all of our characters are very different, and they play off of each other, like, really interestingly, especially when you get the romance element thrown in there as well, which I really like.
It's definitely enemies to lovers.
Oh, gosh. And it kind of sneaks up on you, too, which is what's so great about it. It's, like, all of a sudden, it's happening.
And, you know, like, not spoilers, but I was like, this is happening kind of fast. But then things happen, and you're like, oh, okay, like, this is angsty and good. Okay, I'm on board.
I actually did have somebody, I think it was in the comments of my video for that book, said that they, like, they loved everything except for the romance because they thought it happened too fast. But there's an element that's introduced that I think it, like, it allows for it to happen fast. And, like, I'm trying so hard not to say what it is.
It was well paced. The book's big too, so
It's long. We both listened to it, and it's the audiobook's great. It is very long though, and I will say the second book in the series, because it's going to be a trilogy, is called Children of Virtue and Vengeance, and that is set to come out December 3rd of this year. So if you haven't read Children of Blood and Bone, you definitely want to get on that for sure.
And the last book in the Folk of the Air series is coming out around then, too, eh?
Yeah, it comes out November 19th, I believe, Queen of Nothing.
Yeah, that's exciting, too.
Yeah, that's really exciting. And I tentatively am going to be on that Meta Machina episode, so I'm really excited. It's a really good series. If you haven't read it, please go read Cruel Prince.
The dynamic is one of my favorites.
I was trying to explain it at work, and she's like, that sounds really problematic. And I'm like, oh, but it's not. Because he can't lie, and he doesn't understand why he's so obsessed with her. And it's just, I love it. It's great. And I'm excited to see how it's all going to turn out. It's going to be great. Something else really exciting that happened since we tried to record and now are able to record is that AO3 won a Hugo Award. So now all of you lovely fic writers are award-winning fic writers.
Congratulations.
That's so exciting. That's really, really awesome.
I'm so proud of all the Star Wars fic writers.
Yes. Yes. All of those Reylo fic writers, Burning the Midnight Oil, Jermione, you just got some great inspiration.
Yeah, Shannon and I are still freaking out about that photo of Tom Felton and Emma Watson from today.
It's just, like,
it's so good.
It's so good. I'm like, Hermione, please. They call my dreams come true. They just keep feeding the fans, and it's amazing.
I'm still in shock that photo is real.
Yeah, right? Well, remember when they were, like, skateboarding together and everybody was like, what's happening?
He's teaching her how to play guitar, guys.
Yeah. It's, like, it's everything you could ever dream it would be. All right. So our last news item before we move into our discussion of Crash of Fate is that we did get the trailer for Resistance. And I think we are both still kind of reeling because this is going to be the final season of Resistance.
I'll never stop being sad.
No, never stop being sad. And we talked about this when we tried to record before, but neither one of us are 100% sure that you can wrap up everybody's arcs satisfyingly in just one more season.
Yeah, and that's what makes me wonder if this series is going to end, but we're going to see these characters transition onto another show, just because the show is called Resistance. And once episode 9 happens, will there actually be a Resistance anymore? So in that case, it does make sense. So does that mean we get to still follow Kaz and Miku and Tam and Sinara and Tora onto another show? Because I am down for that. It just has 100%. To be called something different because the Resistance won't exist.
Well, and it would be interesting because that's gonna be kind of like a rebuilding era, because like the war will be over, we'll be transitioning into some kind of new government for the galaxy, and I think everybody is going to be very curious about like what exactly that's gonna look like, and surely they're gonna explore that in comics and maybe even, you know, new movies and stuff. But I feel like that would be a great way to keep moving forward in the timeline with Star Wars without having to be like, oh, it's Skywalkers, because Resistance exists completely outside of the Skywalker saga.
And like I said this on the last time we recorded, but the era that's going to be between episode 8 and episode 9, we're kind of exploring it right now with all the Batu stuff, and then we're going to get the lead up to episode 9 books and comics. We're exploring it right now, and I'm not sure that after episode 9, there's going to be as much interest to re-look at this time period. Because I think they're going to take the opportunity to go before The Force Awakens and after The Rise of Skywalker. Because there's so much in that before Force Awakens that they're like, well, we can't talk about it yet. So they're going to attack, I think they're going to attack that time period like really, really soon after The Rise of Skywalker comes out.
Yeah, like that's when you could get like Lost Star sequels, or you could get, you know, Thrawn and Ezra and like all that kind of stuff. And you can't explore that now because if it touches Palpatine at all or touches anything about like government systems, you know, we can't know about it yet. And there's the time jump is still so limited between Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker, which I think both of us are excited about. But that does mean that, like, you can't do as much. Now, I still feel like with Resistance, like, you could potentially squeeze two seasons out of a year-long time gap. Yeah.
Yeah. The issue with that is that we're going to experience episode 9.
So we'll already know.
And I think that they want to, like, the timeline-wise for release of Resistance episodes, I think they want to be kind of, like, matching.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree with that. Yeah. And I think Lucasfilm knows what they're doing. I don't think this show has been like canceled, you know, because of numbers or anything. I really do think that this was just part of it. And Resistance is so popular and everybody loves it so much. And that's so great. And hopefully that will inspire them to at least, you know, keep those characters going in some kind of way.
Yeah, because the characters are so great, and the voice talent is like is just so amazing. Christopher Sean and Myrna Velasco and Susie McGrath, like they're all.
Oh, Susie is so.
I love Susie. We met Susie at Celebration, and she was just like one of the highlights of the whole weekend.
Well, she was just so nice.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, so was, like, everybody that we met. Like, the whole cast of Resistance is, like, a ray of sunshine. But, like, getting to see, like, Susie, she was on that Sisters of the Force panel and talking about, like, her life and how she got into acting. Like, it was just really special. And I feel like, you know, these people are so amazing, and we need these amazing people in Star Wars. So hopefully that'll keep going.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move into our book talk, and we're going to briefly talk about myths and fables. I've read this book. Alex has not read this book yet. Basically, this book is kind of like an overall meh, I would say. It's not a must read. It is a fun book to read, and I think it has a lot of rereadability because it is a collection of like myths and fables that exist within the Star Wars universe, which that in itself is really interesting because there's this one even where you get to see Vader from like a very propaganda boogeyman type of perspective, which I like to see. But overall, there was only one story that really grabbed me, and that was Gaze of Stone, which is about a Sith apprentice. And everything else was, like, it was fun, but it was just kind of meh. I think kids would really, really love this book. Like, if I was, I used to love having my mom read to me when I was little, and this would have been one where I was like, read me this one. And the art is beautiful, so it's a nice book to have. But if you're looking for anything, like, major, not really going to find it in Myths and Fables.
Mm-hmm. I'd say so far we haven't really gotten anything major in terms of hints to The Rise of Skywalker in any books yet.
No.
I'm trying to think. We've had, in kind of this summer slash fall lead up, we've had Thrawn Treason, we've had Myths and Fables, and we've had Crash of Fate, and we're going to get into that after, but I don't feel like any of those three have really, like, shown me potential Rise of Skywalker hints and leaks and stuff.
Yeah, you got to read Thrawn Treason, so do you want to talk about that just a little bit?
Yeah, so Hope already did a review for our podcast for the entire book, which was amazing, so thank you, Hope. And so for me, I am not a Thrawn fan. And of the character. But there were aspects of this book that I actually really did enjoy. And that was the Chiss Ascendancy and Eli Vanto story. Especially with navigators who have third sight. And they're able to navigate through hyperspace. The story of those young, like, women and young girls was really, really intriguing. And that's what kept me, like, kind of into the book. All when it would flash over to, like, Thrawn's, like, plot line, I'd be like, oh my god. Just let's go back to the Chiss. I want to know more.
Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, I guess that, in a way, is good. Because, like, I think that's a side of Star Wars that you probably wouldn't have thought that you would like. Just because you don't like Thrawn.
Yeah. But there still wasn't enough of it in this book for me to be like, I'm going to pick this up again and read it and recommend it to everyone. If you're a Thrawn fan, read it, obviously. But I am very not a Thrawn fan. So It was okay.
Was it, like, the best one out of the bunch for you?
I don't remember the first one too much, so it's hard to say. It's been so long. It was a blur. I think that I did like it more than the second one. What was that called?
Alliances? Yeah.
Because I just feel like we were so ripped off with the Padme story in that. Yeah. I'm still angry at that book.
All I remember from the first Thrawn, and I don't even know if this is true, but didn't, like, so it's got Governor Price in it from Rebels. Didn't she, like, work at some dojo in, like, Coruscant?
Yeah, I think so. There was a lot of, like, stuff going on. Yeah. I didn't retain this book clearly.
No. And that's why we are so happy that Hope was, like, kind enough to share her review with us, because she does an amazing job. She goes really into it. And if you haven't listened to that review, even if you are planning on reading Thrawn, not planning on reading it, curious about it at all, she hits on all the major points and will definitely tell you what you need to know about those books. Okay, but I think we are ready to move into Crash of Fate. This is by Zoraida Cordova. And it says, reunited at the edge of the galaxy, Izzy and Jules were childhood best friends, climbing the spires of Batuu, inventing silly games, and dreaming of adventures they would share one day. Then Izzy's family left abruptly, without even the chance to say goodbye. Izzy's life became one of constant motion from one world to the next, until her parents were killed and she became a low-level smuggler to make ends meet. Jules remained on Batuu, eventually becoming a farmer like his father, but always yearning for something more. Now, 13 years after she left, Izzy has returned to Batuu. She's been hired to deliver a mysterious parcel, and she just wants to finish the job and get gone. But upon arrival at Black Spire Outpost, she runs smack into one person who still means something to her after all this time. Jules, and the attraction between them is instant and overwhelming.
Oh, yes. Yet despite
it's a very instant and overwhelming. Yet despite Jules seeming to be everything she's ever needed, Izzy hesitates. How can she drag such a good-hearted man into the perilous life she's chosen? Jules has been unsure what his future holds, and now all he knows for certain is that he wants to be with Izzy. How can he convince her to take a chance on someone who's never left the safety of his home world? When Izzy's job goes wrong, the two childhood friends find themselves on the run, and all their secrets will be revealed as they fight to stay alive.
So dramatic.
It's so dramatic. Wow. Okay, so this book, and if you haven't listened to What the Force, she has an amazing interview with the author, but it is like a Han and Luke type of scenario, with Izzy being Han and Jules being Luke. And I think knowing that puts some of this book into a little bit more of a perspective, is what I would say.
Yeah.
So you read this book before I did, because you got it first. And the whole time you were reading it, you were telling me about, like, the time that it takes and the fluffiness level. So, you know, tell me a little bit, like, your experience reading this book.
Okay. So the time period for this book, after the prologue happens, is 24 hours. And I know what she was going for with this. It was like she kind of sold this book on the 24-hour time period. But for me, I needed a little bit longer for these two characters to fall in love, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very, very fluffy. And there is nothing wrong with fluff. And both of us agree that this book, like, is meant to be in Star Wars, and that we need more fluffy books in Star Wars, because there are so many angsty books. There are so many, right?
Well, and there's so many that, like, are so completely, like, unromantic, and, like, or ones that are clearly catering towards an audience that doesn't read a lot of romance novels.
Well, so. I was even gonna say, like, in terms of all the romance, this is really our first fluffy one.
Mm-hmm.
Because think about it, Lost Star is super angsty, Dark Disciple, super angsty, Battlefront, Inferno Squad, super angsty. So this book, like, I'm very, very happy that it exists in canon and that there is this type of romance, because this type of romance exists in literature. We're just not seeing it as much in Star Wars. So I'm very grateful that this exists. It's not my taste in romance, but I'm very, very happy it's here.
Yeah, and I totally agree. And honestly, like, the first half of this book, I was fine with that. I'm like, this is a fluffy romance story. This is, like, them coming back together. They're going on this tour of Batuu. And yes, there is tons of product placement, but none of that bothered me. It wasn't until we started introducing, like, a plot line with, like, Izzy's old gang comes back, and, like, we don't really know what they're doing, and it gets a little bit murky, and it feels kind of like these threads weren't fully formed, and they kind of just got shoved together.
Yeah.
And that's when I think the book started to drag for both of us, right?
Yeah, it felt very coincidental. Like, I was saying to Shannon that about just before the 200-page mark, I really got bogged down in this book, and I just didn't want to. Like, I think I took a few days off from the book, and I was just reading fan fiction or something, and I just didn't want to pick it up. You know what? No, yeah. I wasn't reading fan fiction. I was just watching a lot of YouTube.
I mean, you know, and it's like, I remember thinking specifically, I'm like, this is totally fine. I wish that this book could hurt me a little bit more. But then it went on for too long. And I feel like if we had just stuck to, it's a romantic tour of Batuu, I would have liked it better. It was throwing in the, oh, but this is also Star Wars, so we have to have this gang come in and burn a farm down. I was kind of like, well, why? Maybe if Izzy was still part of that gang, then we could get a little bit of angst in there, but she's not. So it just, it didn't fit for me. And, like, that's just one thing where I'm like, it, the structural issues and the pacing issues, like, it just became more apparent as the story went on, which is unfortunate because it is a good book. And I know so many people are going to love this book, and so many people already have loved this book. It's just, like, for us, we like a little bit more angst. We want to hurt. I need this book to hurt me. I need to hurt a little bit. I would also say that when it comes to Star Wars YA, there are two levels, because there is like upper YA and lower YA. And so this would fit into the category with Most Wanted, Ahsoka, even Queen Shadow, which is totally fine. Yeah. I do feel like, to me, story-wise, it's the weakest, but relationship and character-wise, it could be the strongest, but it's also completely like original characters.
Mm-hmm. I think that I would still put Most Wanted ahead of this one in terms of those four, but I liked it better than Ahsoka. I don't know if I feel about the same about it with Queen Shadow, like on the same level. I don't know.
I think whenever I think about like would normally I try to like phrase it as like would I read it again, although that's already like not a good way to judge it, because like Inferno's Gods 1, where I'm like, I don't know if I can read this book again. I would read Queen Shadow again because I think there's more in it, except I would skip the ending. And I think with Crash of Fate, I'd probably read the beginning of this book again and again skip the ending.
It's a very easy read though.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that reading this book again wouldn't be a chore. It would be easy.
Yeah, like, I read this book in, like, 2 days. Even though it started to drag, it was still really easy to finish, which is great. So I would say, overall, it's a great book. When it comes to, like, what you can find in here, there are a lot of tropes. So it is the, like, soft, good boy, precious farm boy who's falling in love with this tiny little angry girl who just has all this emptiness inside of her. And like, there's this one scene where, and I guess spoilers here, where they go like, not skinny dipping, but basically skinny dipping in a lake. And it's just, it's magic. And it's like, Zoraida, yes, you succeeded. More kissing in Star Wars. I applaud you.
Tall, soft boy and small angry girl.
It's a really good dynamic. It's a good show. Really can't go wrong.
Well, that's Raylo too, though.
Oh, 100%. I will say where it got a little bit cringy is that there is an actual line in this book where it says that Jules is too pure for this world.
Which he is. And there's only a couple of Star Wars characters that we would say are too pure for this world. And the others are Kaz and Niku, but besides them, who really is too pure for this world?
Yeah. Which, I mean, I guess Jules is. I need to spend... See, that's the thing, though. I need to spend more time with him. Mm-hmm. I feel like I didn't spend enough time with Jules to know if he's too pure.
Do you think he'll
pure.
Be in Black Spire?
Maybe. That's...
But I don't think the time period will line up, because Black Spire is going to take place before Crash of Fate.
Right.
And Jules isn't involved with the Resistance at all.
Yeah, that's true.
So unless it's just like a small cameo type of thing.
Yeah, I think if it's anything, it would be a small little, like, oh, look, it's another character from another book that you can go and read, which I'm totally here for. I like little things like that, as long as it's not like, oh, you only get this if you read the book. Mm-hmm. I think it's better when it's just like, a little something extra, you know, like a little fun thing.
Yeah.
When it comes to the Resistance and all that kind of stuff, there's not a lot here. There's really not a lot that you can pull out of to say like, oh, this is predicting episode 9, or oh, this is going to lead into episode 9. The only stuff that we really get about the state of the galaxy is that this is set like 6 months, right?
Yeah, 6 months after Hosnian.
Right, yeah, and the whole galaxy is still in chaos and is still feeling the ripples of that. It talks about, like, medical frigates being grounded, the First Order is clearly recruiting people, and the biggest thing about that is just, this is such a remote world, and it's stressed that this is a really remote world. Like, this is the edge of the galaxy. This is where you go if you want to hide, if you're running away from something, if you're trying to reinvent yourself. and the fact that they are still feeling this war, and the fact that, like, the First Order and the Resistance have still found them is really interesting. I feel like that tells you how big the First Order's shadow is, and that the Resistance just was completely unprepared for it.
Yeah, they really hammered home the point that this was a place that you would, like, kind of go to hide or go to figure out mm-hmm. what your next move is. So is Palpatine hiding back to him?
I don't know.
Has he been
Maybe
there
he's one of the trees.
Oh my gosh.
Could he be the Black Spire? Because there is, like, a Black
Spire. He is like in carbonite freeze within a Black Spire.
That would be amazing. I'm here for this. Okay, I love trees, guys. Trees are awesome.
Yeah.
And I'm here for it that Star Wars also loves trees and, like, is always like, trees are in tune with the Force. And we have, like, a dark side tree and a light side tree. Like, I'm so here for that.
Mm-hmm. Inferno Squad did the same thing with a tree.
Mm-hmm. Inferno Squad, yeah. Last Jedi, Empire Strikes Back. Like, I'm here for it. Let's go. There's also a wishing tree on Batuu, which is so cute. And I love that. Oh, speaking of trees, there is something that they mention in this book that I think is, it's not really about, like, the Skywalker saga part of the story, but it is kind of about the state of the galaxy. There's a planet that is, like, for forestry production. Like, you go there for trees, and they have literally cut down all of the trees. This planet is completely stripped bare. And so they were talking about people are out of a job now. And I'm just like, how do you strip an entire planet of trees? What's happening out here, Star Wars?
Some sort of mechanism crazy. To do it.
That's just, it's a lot. There's a whole bigger conversation too with, like, the way the Empire has turned these planets into deserts and everything, and I love it, and I'm here for it, and I'm glad that it's still here. I like that a lot. I think before, there's one big thing that we want to talk about, but before we get to that, let's talk about Izzy's relationship with her mom.
Okay.
Because we talked about that when we recorded the first time. You know, like, Izzy not feeling super close to her mom, and her mom kind of being absent in her life. And all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. We really, we feel like it's pretty comparable to Jin and Galen. Mm-hmm. Especially there is one scene, spoiler warning, one scene where Izzy gets a holo video from her mom that is really, really reminiscent of Rogue One.
Mm-hmm. It's very Rogue One because it's that closure moment where it's mm-hmm. like, it allows Izzy to finally stop running. That is one thing that I like about the dynamic with Izzy and Jules is because they both lie to themselves. And so Izzy is always lying to herself about how, like, she's fine. She can take care of herself. She doesn't need anybody because that was who she had to be to her mother because her mother wasn't there for her. And seeing her mom talk to her and tell her, you know, like, I still love you and it's okay and all of this, it really allowed Izzy to, like, take her life back into her own hands. Because she was really kind of letting these ideals of who she thought she needed to be shape her. And this allows her to kind of stop and be like, no, this is what I want. And this is what I'm going to go and do. Which is very Jin. I think that's Jin's turning point as well.
Yeah.
Even a little bit with Aiden in Battlefront.
Yeah, but like...
Because she gets that.
With her, it's not so much closure. It kind of destroys her in the sense where she feels like her mom, like, is let down by her.
Well, and there is that question, too, because, you know, she gets that hollow and it's her mom telling her, like, I've lost my respect for you. I still love you because you're my daughter, but, you know, you're a traitor. There is a moment at the end of that book where Aiden believes that her mom died thinking that she was a traitor. And it's never actually, we never actually find out if she did or not.
Well, Aiden's dad tells her that she knew.
But did he actually tell her? I think we talked about this. Yeah.
Do I trust Aiden's dad? Probably not.
I mean, it was good, though, that he told her, because it let her.
And she believed him.
Because otherwise, I think that would have completely broken her. She would not have been able to go on. And that's, you know, those relationships with parents is like a big thing in Star Wars. And we're both hoping that in episode 9, we do get a Ben Solo moment very similar to this in Crash of Fate, where maybe on the Falcon or something, but he sees a holo of maybe Han or Leia, and that allows him to kind of take it back into his own hands.
He needs that closure, and he needs that kind of acceptance. Mm-hmm. He definitely needs the parental acceptance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or else he'll just break.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that, like, I mean, Luke could open that door for him, but it's really only something that Han or Leia could give him. And with Carrie Fisher not around to record new things, that would leave us with maybe getting Han in episode 9, which I think would be really interesting.
I would love to see a holo of him. I would rather that to them trying to write him being a Force ghost.
Because it's... that brings up so many questions then, where it's like, so who can be a Force ghost and who can't? And why isn't Padme here?
Yeah, because for sure, like, if Han's a Force ghost, Padme has to be there too.
Yes, 100%. Like, 100%. Well, I think what we're really going to get is, like, flashbacks. I think if anything, it'll be like a Force ghosty type of thing, but it'll be flashbacks.
Padme's in episode 9, I think I'm just gonna, like, throw myself out of the theater.
I mean, that's already gonna happen. It's like, which moment will break us the most? Cast your bets now. I have no idea.
Yeah, like, no, truly, though, what moment will break me in that theater?
For real. Will it be the kiss? Will it be the sacrifice?
I feel like something's gonna happen even before any of that's gonna happen that's gonna break me. Because I mean, The Last Jedi, like, I was completely broken down by just seeing Yoda.
Yeah, that's true. You need to just put some tissues in your purse now. Have them ready. I think I'm out of tissues in my purse. I need to put some back in there.
Guys, December is so soon. Today is August 19th when we're recording. That is exactly 4 months until, like, the Thursday night preview.
Oh, my gosh. Well, and, like...
4 months.
If you look at it that way, it's, like, almost 3 months after your birthday. Yeah. That's weird.
Like, I never thought we would get here, and now we're in August. Mm-hmm. August and December are pretty close
together. It's basically time for 9. Like, it's happening tomorrow, is what we're saying.
We have a third of a year to go.
I'm not ready. I need to prepare. The last thing we want to talk about with Crash of Fate, and kind of the biggest thing for us, which is totally a non-consequential, nothing detail from this book, is Nate.
Yeah, I think we've kind of run with our theory. Like, so this is us headcanoning a lot. So if you're not into speculation, then fast forward. But this is some of our hardcore speculation into Nate, and he might be nobody. Yep. He might be, like, so, like, nobody.
Watch,
like,
him never get mentioned again.
I mean, we're already clowns, so whatever.
Yeah, we've already got the makeup
That's
on.
Okay.
It's okay. So there we have some interesting things about Black Spire Outpost, especially considering Savvy and his workshop. Savvy is a gatherer, and he kind of is, like, running this whole gathering operation, and they are people who are upholding the teachings of the light side of the Force and the teachings of the Jedi, even if they themselves are not Force users and are not Jedi. That's why there are kyber crystals on Galaxy's Edge. That's why we have all of this lightsaber stuff going on. And Jules does run into a guy who is very odd. He's really weird when, you know, Jules is talking to him. He's got all of this random junk with him. He's described as a scavenger. And the second I met this character, I'm like, is this the Force Collector? Is this what's happening? Are we connecting these two dots right now?
All we know about the Force Collector is he's a restless teenager.
Yeah.
and he has a connection to the Force, and he is able to touch objects and see their story.
Yes.
I believe. And from what I know, he does not have a name yet. He is nameless. So our theory could be sound.
Could be. We could be clowns. We'll never know until it comes. But I feel like it would make sense, because we did find out at Comic-Con that Force Collector is technically a tie-in novel to Galaxy's Edge. So it's going to connect somehow. And the only way that we can really see that it would connect is through the Gatherers. They're not the only Gatherers that we know. Laura Santeca is also probably a Gatherer. And there's a lot of speculation that Force Collector could connect us back with Laura Santeca. So I just feel like this Nate character, he's going to come back somehow. And he comes back at the end of the book. He's only in this book twice. And Jules is saving him from getting beat up both times. But the second time we run into him, he is like holding a kyber crystal. And he tells Jules that the Force does move us together and apart as it needs to. And it's just all very suspicious. Much to ponder.
So much to ponder, because we know that Force Collector, we were told at San Diego Comic-Con, is actually a tie-in to both Galaxy's Edge and The Rise of Skywalker. Yes. Which is very interesting. Yes. And that hadn't been planned all along.
Right. So it just all kind of comes back to that. And it's just, I don't believe in, like, throwaway characters. Sometimes that happens, and when that happens, I think it's just a bad writing decision. But with Star Wars, like, they're so tight when it comes to story building, and, you know, we have the story group and everything. So I just find it very hard to believe that they would name this character. He has a first name and a last name, which I am not going to try to pronounce because it's weird. I just don't believe that they would name this character and then mention him twice in this book for him not to come back.
And from what I've heard, he's not a walk-around character in Galaxy's Edge. Because that's another reason why he would have two names. Because, I mean, Vi walks around Galaxy's Edge. We've seen photos of her. And then there's Savvy, who you meet inside the lightsaber workshop if you choose to build a lightsaber. There's an actual character. Besides, like, the Episode 9 characters, like the Stormtroopers, Rey, like, all of them, they're walking around. But are there any, like, Galaxy's Edge characters?
I mean, Doc Ondar, but he's like an animatronic.
Yeah.
So I don't think so.
Because I haven't heard anyone say there's some character, mysterious character called Nate that walks around.
Right, yeah. And I mean, this would be a weird character to have walk around anyway, because he's not really anything. He's just a scavenger.
But I think that, like, you know, we haven't been, so I could be wrong about this, but there's that app, right, that you can kind of do missions and stuff for people. So that's the only other thing that I could think of, is if he's walking around, he has to do with kind of those missions people are taking.
That's true. That could be something as well. We'll know for sure, obviously, when Force Collector comes out or when we learn more about Force Collector. But even if he's not the Force Collector, him being part of Savvy's scavengers, I think we could see that come back even as early as Black Spire, because that's going to play into the Resistance too. Like, for some reason, they won't side with either the First Order or the Resistance, but obviously, you know, Vi has to try to get them, right?
But it's really weird the way they're written, that they won't give lightsabers to the Resistance.
Mm-hmm. That's probably just because when they say that they have to have them for the other guests, which are us. But I feel like that could also just be because they want to uphold the balance. And maybe them, picking a side would be them not supporting a balance.
Or just supporting capitalism.
That's true. It's also capitalism. This book is very heavy-handed with the capitalism. Make sure you get your fried and Dory and Tip-Yip and try the fire sauce at Ronto Roasters.
And have a fuzzy tongue.
Yes, and a Bespin fizz?
Yeah.
Which, like, again, we talked about, that stuff didn't really take us out of it until it did, which wasn't really until
it was happening a lot.
It was because it happened so much. Is there anything? Oh, I guess there's one more thing before we move on. So the ending of this book with the epilogue, we both kind of have different interpretations of what that could lead to. We were talking about this when we recorded the first time, that maybe they could be the same thing. But the epilogue of this book, so obviously spoilers, does leave off with a huge battle breaking off into like the upper atmosphere. Jules and Izzy see it. It kind of seems like maybe they're going to do something inside with the resistance. And we're both pondering, what does this mean?
My immediate understanding of it was it's the rise of the resistance, right? Yeah.
And I was very prelude to nine. But the more I think about it, the more I'm like, maybe it is just the ride. I think I aim too high.
How much of a time jump is happening between the rest of the book and then the epilogue?
None, right? It's like right then. So yeah, no, I guess it can't be prelude to nine because there's still like 6 more months to go. But if there's still like 6 more months to go, how could there be a battle happening? That means that they've been found, right? I'm so confused.
Because there's, like, we've seen the trailer for the Rise of the Resistance ride. You're on a Star Destroyer, and then you just see Resistance ships jump into real space, like, in front of you in the window. So that's, like, why I connected the two.
Yeah.
But, like, from what I understand, like, Rise of the Resistance still takes place before episode 9.
Yes.
So confusing because the ride's not even open yet. So it's so hard to say.
Yeah, I think once the ride opens, we'll probably know for sure. And again, like, just getting more books, too. Like, even when we get Black Spire or for sure when we start getting, like, Spark of Resistance and Resistance Reborn, we'll know for absolute certain if that's what's going on.
I'm so excited for Black Spire. Mm-hmm.
The more, like, the closer we get, the more excited I am for it, for sure. Like, my hype level's a lot higher than it was. I actually found out today that I hadn't pre-ordered the book yet, so I pre-ordered it today. I was waiting for the price to go down and did not.
Is that next week or the week after?
As of this episode coming out, it should be next week. Because it's, like, the last week in August, right?
Well, don't we have 2 more weeks?
It comes out the...
Because we're gonna talk about D23 next episode.
Right. It comes out the 27th.
The 19th. Okay. That makes sense.
It comes out the 27th. So yeah, we won't be talking about Black Spire like the next week. We probably could, but that's a huge time crunch. And we're also getting D23 stuff, which we're gonna talk about in a little bit. So we wanna be sure that we talk about that kind of stuff too. And Black Spire is very likely gonna get its own episode because we're both anticipating there to be a lot of things to pull out of that book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think we are ready to move into Twitter questions.
So Miss This said, I'll be finishing the book tonight. Did the park references take you out of it? I know a lot of people felt they were heavy-handed. I think that's because I haven't been to GE and I couldn't connect the exact visual examples with the references. It didn't pull me out of the story.
Yeah, and like we said, it didn't necessarily take us out of the story. I think it's totally fine for this book to be an advertisement for Galaxy's Edge. Like, that's totally fine. And, like, we haven't been yet, so, like, I did think it was kind of fun at the beginning of this book. I just think that when that plot got introduced and things started to get really tangled together, the constant plot product placement really became apparent and then kind of annoying.
Yeah. Yeah, and it makes me wonder if people who aren't really planning on going to Galaxy's Edge just because, like, it isn't their thing, like, parks aren't really their thing, it makes me wonder, like, how they feel about it, if they just don't feel drawn to the Galaxy's Edge books at all just because it's like, oh, I'm not going to get anything out of it.
Yeah, and I do know that some people, like, are turned off by the fact that these are, you know, like, blatant advertisements just for a place where you're going to go spend money. And I totally understand that argument, and I totally understand why that's frustrating. It's more than that, but it is still an advertisement, and it's, there's no way to say that it's not. It's very obvious. Mm-hmm. Okay, our next question is from Sean, and he said, what is the best thing it added to the lore of Galaxy's Edge?
So I think one of the really cool things it added was the Wishing Tree. And I think that I didn't know too much about the Wishing Tree before this book. I knew it existed, but it was really cool how they went into it and how you make a wish, you put a little string on the tree, and then when it's gone, that's when the wish comes true. And I thought that lore was really kind of sweet and nice. I also really liked Oga's throne. Was a throne of black spires, and it just like created this image in my head, like of the Iron Throne, but with black spires instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like the Wishing Tree as well, because it's such an interesting detail to put in Star Wars, and it makes this kind of feel like it feels like a place where people live, and like that it has a culture. Mm-hmm. And it ties into as well, there's a story in Myths and Fables that's on this planet, and it's kind of told like the trees and the black spires have seen a lot of things. And I really like the idea of that, like that the black spires and these petrified trees have been around for so long and have seen so much, and like there's so much culture here. Like, it feels very lived in.
Yeah. And it feels very Star Wars having this tree, which is kind of like a symbol of hope, because mm-hmm. making a wish on this tree gives you hope that it'll come true, and that's very, very Star Wars.
There's something too that you can like that people like rub for luck. I can't remember what that was though.
Yeah,
I remember something. That scene, though, because Izzy says that she feels like a tourist when she does it. And I'm like, well, yeah, oh. like all of the tourists who are doing that at Disneyland. Okay, so our last question is technically three questions, and they come from Gina. And I will start with the question for Alex. And she said, how did Alex feel about the level of fluff or angst or lack thereof in the book?
I think I already approached this earlier, but I think the level of fluff is perfect just because we don't have that level of fluff ever before. Me personally, it is not my cup of tea, but I have nothing against it existing, and I'm like really, really happy because I know so many people are such like big fluff readers. I'm not. Yeah,
definitely. And then she asked me, can Shannon elaborate on the plot that she thought was forced into the narrative? So this is in my video for this. I talked about that it felt really forced, and I did say that here too. It's that whole plot line with Izzy's crew coming back and them kind of just being in the background, and they keep running into Izzy. And I never really understood why she got forced out of the crew to begin with. And then her ex-boyfriend coming back in and kidnapping Jules, like, all of that was so lost on me, and it just didn't feel like it fit. It felt really... It felt like it belonged in another book, or, like, in another draft of the book, I think. Yeah. So if that wasn't part of it, or if Izzy was still part of the gang, it would have flowed better for me, but as it stands, it didn't work for me. Her last question is, this book is bound to be compared to Lost Stars. How do y'all feel about that?
I didn't think it was anything like Lost Stars. So I think that the comparing is just that it's another romance. And there's so many romances in Star Wars.
Yeah. Books. I think the reason it would get compared to Lost Stars is because the author did say that she was very inspired by Lost Stars. But they're not similar at all. Like, even the type of romance is not similar at all.
Mm-hmm. I think the only other reason is that it is original characters.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess they to a certain extent, grew up together, but not really.
Yeah, because they were together, what, for, was it 2 years?
Something like that, yeah.
And then they were separated for 13 years. They were 6 when they were separated, and then 13 years later, they got back together, and that was, I wish that that period was a little shorter.
Yeah, I think if, we kind of talked about this a little bit, like, if the characters had been aged up when they left, and then that time gap had been a little bit shorter, and then they had maybe instead of 24 hours, like 3 days, that would have already, I think, fixed some of the pacing for me. But yeah, I'd say like comparing this to Lost Stars is like comparing apples and oranges. And it all comes down to preference. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if you like angst, then you'll like Lost Stars. If you like fluff, then you'll like Crash of Fate. Like, and that's totally fine. Okay, so next thing is our little Bebos. Alex, what are little Bebos?
Little Bebos are just little things that we enjoyed about the topic we talked about. My little Bebo is the Black Spire throne. I thought it was really cool. Oga's cool. I'm really intrigued by her, and I'd like to see her in Black Spire.
She's like a mafia boss. Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Mine was that there was a mention of botanists in Star Wars.
Yes.
And this is really on brand because when it's mentioned during that like super romantic, like skinny dipping scene. And like when I saw it, I was like, oh, botanists! And like the next page is when you're like, suddenly they're on the ground. And meanwhile, I'm like, botanists in space! So it was very...
I'm like, what is going on in this scene? I don't know how you just suddenly end up on the ground.
What do you mean? You just, now we're on the, it's just like, suddenly our clothes were gone. It's like, what? How did that happen?
It's like, well, you know how that happened.
It just fell off, right? That's just what happened. Yeah, it's great. Botanists. It's cool. You know, the only other mention of botanists that we've had was Qui-Gon, and he said that in another life he'd be a gardener. I'm like, that's pretty cool.
And there was in Queen Shadow, there was some gardening.
That's true. They built a greenhouse. I love plants, guys. Yeah. Plants are great. You know, those Metasequoia glyptostriboides. So, next episode is going to be all about D23, because D23 is happening this weekend as of this episode coming out, which I will also say I will be covering Saturday's coverage in a live stream on Network 1901's YouTube channel. So if you want to check that out, I would love to chat with you guys. It's happening at 10 p.m. Eastern, which is definitely past our bedtimes. That's okay. We are old ladies. But that is when the live action panel is happening. So I'm really excited to talk about D23. But we do have a lot of predictions going into D23. And we actually made a bingo card. So Alex, would you like to talk to us about this bingo card?
Yeah. So I put together a bingo card yesterday. We both made 12 predictions each. And I put all these 24 predictions onto a bingo card for us to stamp out as the weekend is going by.
Yes.
Now, some of these are more likely than others. I think we just had a lot of fun with it. We also were a little bit salty about some of our predictions, too. So we were just kind of having fun.
So what are your predictions for D23?
Okay. My first one is Kylo looking pouty and dirty. I just think that either in behind-the-scenes footage or on a poster, he's going to be very sad-looking and covered in dirt.
Awesome.
And then a purple-indigo color scheme on character posters. So last D23, we got those red color scheme posters for our characters. I think that they're going to go with this color scheme of Episode 9, the indigo-purple color.
Mm-hmm.
I think this one's a little, like, out of left field, but a Reylo poster, maybe of them, like, looking at each other or something, but just a poster that just has Kylo and Rey on it. Behind the scenes footage of the Rain fight from the Vanity Fair coverage, they're still pretending like Matt Smith isn't in the movie. a reference to the Phantom Menace. I feel like that's pretty likely.
I think so, too. Yeah. After Celebration, I feel like...
Kathleen Kennedy telling us how satisfying the ending of the saga is. I think that's very likely also. New info about the Knights of Ren. I think we're going to get something. Not during the movie panel, but during the Disney Plus panel, I think Jon Favreau is going to mention the use of practical effects mixed with CG. I feel like that's very on brand for him. This is a little salty, but Claude is going to get more footage than Rose.
Yep, I think so.
Likely. I do not want it, but seems likely to me.
Yep.
This one is not Star Wars, but they're going to finally announce it. Live action Atlantis movie. Finally. Officially.
We have selfish reasons for that. It's okay.
And then my last one is Adam Driver actually shows up. And I think that's very unlikely, but I thought it was fun.
Yes, I think so too. Okay, so mine was that we were going to get a poster, but no trailer. I'm in the camp, but we're going to get a trailer later.
I think that's very likely.
I think they're going to talk about Rey and Kylo's interesting relationship, because that's how they kept phrasing it in the Vanity Fair. We're probably going to get lots of Lando, even though I think Lando is going to play a really small part. Maybe a Palpatine tease, you know? I think somebody's going to mention that Adam is a very big man.
That always happens.
I really think they're going to announce another Disney Plus Star Wars show. So we already have Cassian and Mandalorian. I think with Resistance ending, they're probably going to announce another one.
But do you think this would be Obi-Wan?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. This could be their chance to either put that to rest or finally confirm it.
Honestly, it hasn't really been confirmed yet.
No, people just keep talking about it all the time. But a show that has been confirmed and they never talk about, I think they're going to actually talk about the Cassian show for once. We know nothing about this other than that it's about K2 and Cassian. So I'd love to... Is he going to touch Yabba?
If he talks about that, I'm going to freak out.
I'm going to die. I will seriously die. I think Dio will steal the show because he's an adorable baby duck.
Mm-hmm. They'll bring him out again, I think.
Oh, yeah. I think if Celebration is anything to go by, they're going to continuously say, this is the end of a 9-part saga. This is the end of a 9-part... This is the final installment of a 9-part saga. This one is more of just in general. Tom Holland will make an appearance.
At which panel?
The Star Wars panel, because he'll be Thane Kyrell and his tummy will appear. Oh. I got that picture you sent me.
But he will also be there for the Atlantis reveal.
Oh, of course, because he's going to play Milo Thatch, obviously. We already know this. Duh. I think Resistance will get paid dust. They'll probably mention it, that it's getting, that's only having one more season. They might play the trailer, but I don't think they're going to hype it at all, which is dumb. And I think we'll get more Sith Trooper stuff.
We're going to get too much Sith Trooper stuff.
I agree. I think it's probably going to be too much.
So we will post our bingo card on Twitter, and you can follow along with us and see how boo-boo the fool we are.
Yes, we would love to see. If we get bingos, please tweet at us. That would be super great. I want to mention that we are presented by Network 1901, so we are under their umbrella. We just redid our Patreon tiers, so if you are not a patron of Network 1901, you should definitely go and check it out. And I believe it's for the $5 tier. Part of the reward that you get is some lipstick and lightsaber buttons, which right now, we don't sell those on our TeePublic shop. The only way to get them is to send in your Star Wars story, and we definitely want to hear from you. Like, I will mail you buttons if you send in your Star Wars story. But now, if you support us on the $5 tier on Patreon, you'll get some Network 1901 stickers and then some lipstick and lightsabers buttons, along with all of the other rewards from all the other tiers. So if you're interested at all in that, please check that out. And please send in your Star Wars story. Like, we seriously want to hear from you guys. We have so much planned, and we love hearing your stories, and we love sharing your stories on the show. If you want to follow us, we are always on Twitter. For the Lipstick and Lightsabers account, we are lip_lightsabers. I am at McCarter Shannon, and Alex is at Alex Leonis. That is everything got for you today, though, and we will see you guys next time. Bye.
Bye.